Friends, I would like to read a poem by Margaret Avison, or Avison. If you are of a certain age, you will have studied this poem in a Canadian literature class. It's one of my favorites. Listen, you can follow along using the insert in your bulletin. For everyone, the swimmer's moment at the whirlpool comes. But many at that moment will not say, "This is the whirlpool then." By their refusal, they are saved from the black pit and also from contesting the deadly rapids and emerging in the mysterious and more ample further waters. And so their bland, blank faces turn and turn, pale and forever at the rim of suction. They will not recognize. Of those who dare the knowledge, many are whirled into the ominous center that gaping vertical seals up for them an eternal boon of privacy, so that we turn away from their defeat with a despair, not for their deaths, but for ourselves, who cannot penetrate their secret nor even guess at the anonymous breadth where one or two have won the silver reaches of the estuary. The swimmer's moment is a decision point. Such moments might find you on a cliff at Kildare Provincial Park, high above the water, where you decide, "Oh no, I'm not going to jump after all." Or perhaps, more seriously, for example, our swimmer's moment might be that day when we must decide as children to either confront an elderly parent about her need to give up her driver's license or not. And naturally, we're anxious about all such decision points. I mean, we might belly flop. Or, Mom, she might be very angry and write us out of the will. Fearing trouble, we might choose not to choose and turn our bland, blank faces away from the whirlpool and live forever on the rim of suction, never daring. A gray life. Avison says, however, that some people do dare, and so they win the silver reaches of the estuary. An estuary is where the river's fresh water meets the sea's salt. Estuaries like Chesapeake Bay or the Amazon Delta are incredibly rich areas of biodiversity. Estuaries are life. The silver reaches of the estuary, it conjures up images of cottages and crabbing and late evening bonfires on shore. A good, joyous life. In our text from Hebrews, you could think of Jesus' decision to set his face for Jerusalem and all that awaited him there as his swimmer's moment. Jesus could have chosen otherwise. Jesus could have turned around and walked with his own bland, blank face, walked right back to Galilee. He could have. Jesus might have chosen to take up carpentry and skip Jerusalem altogether. But for the joy set before him, says the writer of Hebrews, for the sake of the silver reaches of his own estuary, Jesus dived in and saw his Lenten journey to its end on the cross. It's hard to know 2,000 years later, what exact joy Jesus aimed for. He spoke of rising from the dead. He almost certainly wanted to demonstrate by his death the power of turning the other cheek, of changing the whole world, which he did through passive resistance. But whatever exactly would give Jesus the greatest joy, he would achieve incredible things for humanity only at a great cost to himself. He was abandoned, he was whipped, he was crucified because he decided for joy. In our text, Jesus' story is told so that we will do likewise. The author writes, "Let us also lay aside every weight and run with perseverance the race that's set before us." And then in verse 12, the writer of Hebrews concludes by saying, "Therefore, for the joy also set before you, therefore, come on now, lift your drooping hands and strengthen your weak knees and make straight paths with your feet. Just do it." And we must. For we really, really do live in very dangerous times. You know, I just read Thomas Friedman's new book, Thank You for Being Late. In it, the New York Times columnist describes what seemed to me to be the 101 crises facing humans today. I mean, just a few of them. Economic dislocation, climate change, failed states, desertification, refugees, terrorism, overpopulation, racism, ineffective schools. Friedman paints a very bleak picture of a world facing its cosmic swimmer's moment, a world that he believes our children and grandchildren will suffer in unless we act now. You know, at this point in the sermon, I suppose I could go on to describe some of these crises at greater length. They are, after all, hard for us living in our Western bubble of plenty and wealth. Some of these crises are hard for us to see or empathize with, but I'm not going to go into greater depth on them now. After all, I know that you all feel the unease and uncertainty that runs without ceasing like a long-distance marathoner just under our skin. This unease helped fuel the Trump and alt-right phenomenon of our era. The siege mentality that is so much a part of our life today, especially if you open the newspapers. The crises of our day kind of loom over us like Mount Vesuvius loomed over ancient Pompeii. Now is our swimmer's moment. Will we act? Or will we live in denial, turn away from the whirlpool? And just what is the joy set before us? A safe, just, meaningful future for our children and grandchildren? You know, if we do act, there are no guarantees anymore. The deadly rapids are a black pit, says Margaret Avison. There's no red emergency button for us to push and thereby save the world from itself. I suppose acting starts with making changes in our national spending and being willing to sacrifice, in order to avert or mitigate the effects of some of these crises, climate change, habitat destruction, failed states. And it continues with our choices at work, you know, what we invest in, who we hire, what strategic goals we choose for our companies. Acting now involves what we buy and what we eat and our politics and our conversation at parties and our willingness to generously support organizations tackling some of our society's deepest fears and problems. It's like Jesus heading for Jerusalem that final time. We must dive in to achieve the silver reaches of the estuary. It takes courage and faith in order to achieve the joy that we all imagine is before us. But turning away is really, really tempting. It's like this. At the turn of the last century, Blondin was a great French tightrope walker. It's a story you may know because it's kind of entered into the annals of great Canadian stories. But once, before 10,000 screaming fans, Blondin inched his way from the Canadian side to the American side of Niagara Falls, above the roaring whirlpool of the Niagara River, step by step. And then as he stepped off the tightrope, his fans on the other side, they chanted his name, Blondin, Blondin, Blondin. So Blondin raised his hands. And he said, I'm going back over the falls on my tightrope, but this time I will carry someone on my shoulders. Do you believe me? Wow, the whole crowd screamed back, we believe, we believe. So Blondin silenced them one more time and he asked, who will be that person? And now the crowd was silent. You see, this was their swimmer's moment at the whirlpool below. But at last, one man climbed onto Blondin's shoulders and was carried back safely on his shoulders across the rope to the other side of the whirlpool, winning the silver reaches of the Canadian side. One man faced his swimmer's moment and succeeded. And now the crowd really did believe. And in fact, many clamored for their chance to cross the river. You know, my dream for everyone here and for my grandchildren is that for the sake of the joy set before us, we will now, at our society's swimmer's moment, that we will choose as Jesus chose. Jesus, who is God for us and with us in some kind of lovely, mysterious way, joined us in life's struggle. According to the hymn we're just going to sing in a few minutes, he joined us to show us that we can satisfy our deepest longings for the sake of the joy set before us. We can act now to emerge in those mysterious and more ample further waters. We could, we must, we will climb on each other's shoulders, step by step, reach the silver reaches of the estuary. I think that's something joyful to work for this Lent. Amen.